It was about a month ago that I received a note from Glenn Gilbert checking to see if I would be one of the storytellers this summer with the theme to involve transitions and transformations. And I read it over quickly, and I initially had some misgivings due to the word transformations jumping out at me. My image of myself is simply not a transformation sort of guy. I'm sort of a stick-in-the-mud, set-in-his-ways person, a plodder who mostly slogs along, and all the sprinters and the jugglers and the acrobats are at the other end of the continuum. My view of myself is sort of a personification of the Woody Allen quote that 90% of success in life is simply showing up. So speaking about transformation, becoming transformed, made me a bit uneasy. As I read Glenn's email more carefully, I realized the starting place was really transitions, something that everyone experiences in multiple ways, and I could certainly talk about that. And when I thought more about it, I realized that the me way down inside somewhere is not who he once was. I have, in fact, changed a lot over my 70-plus years, and I'm not the same person I was as a child, as a teenager, as a young parent, as a grandfather. So I guess in some sense I have been transformed over time. It sort of sneaks up on you. Also, by way of introduction, even though what I'm doing this morning is just storytelling and not a real sermon like Carl, Laura, or Anna would preach, I thought it would be appropriate to have some sort of a biblical or theological overlay for what I'm going to say. So for a framework to think about this, I turned to Marcus Borg, whose writings have meant a great deal to me. In one of his earlier books, Meeting Jesus for the First Time, Borg talks about three foundational stories in the Bible. He calls them mega stories, which are told over and over in different ways and also serve as lenses through which we can understand other biblical and theological issues. In thinking about this, I came to realize that these three mega stories can also be thought of describing three different types of transformations. So I'm going to place the story of what's happened in my life in the context of these three mega stories, with particular emphasis on the third one, which has special resonance for me. The first story the Borg identifies of that of being dirty and then becoming scrubbed up and made clean, being defiled and made pure and new, perhaps even being washed in blood. This story originates in the practice of priestly temple sacrifice in the Old Testament, which then became one model for thinking about the place of Jesus in our theology. For many, this is the only story. The story of making a complete mess of things and encountering forgiveness and redemption through Jesus and being restored to wholeness and acceptability and perhaps even a pair of wings in a heavenly afterlife. Now, most of you who know me, that I am basically a pretty nice person who has never done anything really bad, and so my thought is we can just skip over this story. And I'll continue to add a footnote and an asterisk whenever we sing about wretches like me in Amazing Grace, as wonderful as that song is. The second megastory that Borg identifies is moving from bondage to freedom. It includes going from oppression to liberation. It includes being deprived, hungry, and thirsty, and finding abundance in some sort of a promised land. The Exodus story from Egypt from the Old Testament, which we heard today in a encapsulated version in the first scripture reading from Deuteronomy, is the prime biblical example of this. And I can sort of relate to this, although for a person who has led a comfortable and privileged life in the USA, it sometimes seems perhaps a bit contrived and fakey to think of oneself as really being in bondage or being deprived in any significant way. So I'm going to set that story aside too. Although, as a cautionary note, I should note that Borg includes the New Testament story about the rich young ruler who was trapped by his wealth and unable to respond to Jesus urging him to give it up as another telling of this bondage story, perhaps its converse. The third mega story is what I'm going to focus on. It involves coming back home after a period of being away, or being lost, or confused, or in exile, or alienated, or perhaps in some situations, even just finding a meaningful home in the first place. Today's second scripture from the book of Ezra illustrates the prime Old Testament example of this third mega story, the story of Israel's exile to Babylon and eventual return to what they considered their promised land. Now, we don't often have scripture from the books of Ezra and his buddy Nehemiah, and Mabel Bible quizzing wasn't your thing and a bit fuzzy on the details, so let me put the scripture in context for you. The Israelites have been carried off to captivity in Babylon for several generations, but were released to return home by Cyrus, the leader of Persia, Iran, after he defeated the Babylonians. And Ezra and Nehemiah were the leaders of the Israelites when they returned. Ezra was the leader of the government and headed up the building project for the temple, and Nehemiah was a prophet and a key religious leader. One could perhaps think of them as the Donald Trump and Jerry Falwell of their day. In a scripture reading, we heard of the older generation who remembered Jerusalem as children and were now back home sobbing when the temple, the cornerstone of the new temple, was laid. In the New Testament, the parable of the prodigal son stands out as one prime telling of this homecoming story. So these are the three mega stories: becoming clean, being liberated, and coming home, with a third one, that of coming home, having particular resonance for me in this point in my life. So let's get on with my story. But first, I should mention I'm also going to do a couple hymns in my storytelling that relate in some fashion to places we have lived. Since I ended up being the only storyteller this morning and need to stretch this out for 20 minutes or so, I thought, thought this would be a good way to help accomplish this. I've decided that I'm going to be speaking of transitions in my life in terms of geography, although they're often related things involving family life, births, deaths, marriages, was employment changes, educational and career moves, health concerns, etc. So here's the list of places we have lived, which is almost as long as the list Rose came up with last week. Morgantown, West Virginia, Wheeling, West Virginia, Cleveland, Ohio, Nashville, Tennessee, Hazard, Kentucky, Streetsboro and Hudson, Ohio, Worcester, Ohio, and Goshen, Indiana. The first place on the list is Morgantown, West Virginia, where I was in graduate school studying music and where Marna and I lived right after our marriage. It was a time-limited residence where putting down roots and establishing long-term relationships was not part of the picture. Immediately following this, in 1968, we moved to inner-city Wheeling, West Virginia, where we had our first real jobs and began our professional working careers. This was not an easy time, especially for Marna. Work was challenging, and we felt as if we were pretty much totally on our own, without a lot of support, especially close by. Our time in Wheeling ended up being cut short, which in retrospect was perhaps fortuitous. My draft deferments were ended, and I was forced to resign in mid-year and move to my alternative service 1W placement. We ended up relocating to Cleveland, Ohio, where I was initially hired as a music therapist in a large state mental hospital, and where Marna resumed her teaching, this time in a much healthier setting where she regained her confidence and was quite successful and had several close friends who were professional peers. My work at the state hospital was challenging and initially quite discouraging in that it was, for me, pretty much a totally new world, one for which I had a little background to prepare me. And in case you didn't know, state hospitals are typically not wonderful places to be in any capacity. It was also the first time I'd lived in a large urban environment, the first time I had worked in a setting with such diversity of races, cultures, and economic circumstances, and the first time I had been around people with serious mental illness. Fortunately for me, it was also a place where I got to rub elbows with some really, really smart, creative, and progressive people who took me under their wings and gave me opportunities to develop and learn professionally in ways that otherwise would not have happened. Incidentally, this was also a time that I developed friendships with other CEOs who would open up the world of birdwatching to me. And Bruce Glick and I have discovered that we have a lot of mutual friends neither of us knew previously anything about from those years. During these early years, Mar and I would occasionally visit a church, Presbyterian churches, that's how we'd been raised, but mostly we were busy with other things. And when we did go, we most often felt like misfits, especially given the vital and progressive church experience we had recently come from while in college. This was the 1960s, after all, where the role and orientation of organized religion in our society, at least in our college setting, was quite a bit different than it is currently. After my time at Cleveland State Hospital and a result of this experience, I ended up pursuing a career change, and we moved to number four on my list of places, Nashville, Tennessee, where I enrolled in further graduate studies at Vanderbilt University, this time in special education and psychiatric rehabilitation. So I said we're going to sing, so we're going to sing now. And since it's Nashville, I thought we would sing what I believe is the only country western song in the hymnal. So turn to 515. Jesus, Rock of Ages. I don't remember ever singing this one here, but Becky says we have. So here goes.
True.
Thank you. That was lovely. After Nashville and Vanderbilt, we moved to Hazard, Kentucky, where I took a job at Hazard Community College, which was also a branch of the University of Kentucky. This was before the Dukes of Hazard TV program. This was not a large institution, as you can imagine, and the fact that I had two graduate degrees made me a prize there, although my primary job was heading up the Human Services Technology program and teaching the first 2 years of the social work curriculum. I was also head of the music department, where, among other things, I directed the college community choir. We are excited to be moving to this part of the country. Marna had done her senior independent study project in college on British folk music in the southern Appalachians. Occasionally, we would bump into Jean Ritchie at the grocery store when she was home visiting family. Our daughter Sonia was born in Hazard in the Miners Hospital, and we adopted our son Elmo while we were living there. In the larger scheme of things, it's perhaps significant Hazard was the first place we had personal contact with Mennonites, other than as tourists in Lancaster or Holmes counties. There was a family services VS unit about 20 miles from Hazard in Whitesburg, Kentucky, and I had some of my students doing their field placements with this agency. So we got to know the folks there, and several sang in the college community chorus that I directed. For those of you who are from the Belle Fountain, West Liberty area and know Larry Augsburger, he courted his wife, Jean Ann, in my choir. We were also friends with Anna Nolte, a nurse at the Hazard Hospital, who was a conservative Mennonite from the Lancaster area, who knew our son Elmo from when he was an infant who spent so much time in the hospital nursery. After Elmo was living with us, we had a wedding to attend, and Anna volunteered to make his clothes for this event. And as it turned out, Elmo's first dress-up outfit was blue polyester shorts with suspenders and a plain coat. So while we're in Eastern Kentucky, it's time to sing another song from that part of the world, one that we don't sing too often. So turn to 139 in the hymnal. Far, far away. This is the story of the prodigal son. As I mentioned earlier, this is the prime New Testament example of the coming home megastory that Marcus Borg wrote. There's lots of different ways to sing this, but we're going to do it on the slow side, based on a version sung by Tina Liza Jones, a folk singer friend of ours. And Asia is going to play through the melody once, and we do verse, and then we do the refrain after each verse.
Wow. The narrow roads and love unknown, he beheld me and embraced me, but and welcomed all his son. I will rise and go to Jesus, he will embrace me.
As interesting as Hazard was, and as much as we enjoyed being there, it was not the place where we wanted to raise a family. So after 3 years in Hazard, we moved back to Ohio, where I took a job working in a different state hospital with some of the folks I knew from my earlier experience. And after a couple of years, I ended up heading up a community agency that I involved in establishing in my earlier work. We also had two more children, and life was both good, and it was challenging. By this time, church had again become a more regular part of our lives, and it was mostly a good thing. But the closest Presbyterian church was in Kent, which is about 15 miles away, and getting there and staying involved with four children was a challenge. Through Marna's connection with a friend, we ended up making a visit to the Mennonite Church in Aurora, Ohio, which was much closer. Some things we liked and some were not so wonderful, but the social support we found there, along with the notion that God was found in community life, and the notion that discipleship was something to which we give more than just lip service, was very helpful at that time in our lives. And the singing was not so bad either. We had attended the church, Mennonite Church in Aurora, about 3 years, when another job change on my part resulted in our moving back to Worcester, where Mona and I had gone to college. Our assumption when this happened was that in Worcester we'd be reconnecting to the campus Presbyterian Church that had been so important and influential to us during our college years. However, when we arrived, we found that both we and the church had changed over 20 years. And as part of this, we discovered that we had become more Mennonite than we had realized. So even though we had some affiliation with the College Presbyterian Church in Worcester, our primary church home ended up to be at Oak Grove Mennonite Church. It was also during these years that we discovered Laurelville Mennonite Church Center. And if truth be told, our experiences at Laurelville during music events was probably the most significant and compelling factor in cementing our relationship with the Mennonite Church. It was there that we became acquainted with Ken Nofsinger and Marlene Croft and Ted Schwartz and Marilyn Hauser-Ham, Mary Lehman Yoder, Don Harms, Alice Parker, and many others. And we became a regular part of that unique community of believers that did church together only a couple of days each year in January. After 25 years in Worcester and upon our retirement, we decided in 2012 to relocate to Goshen, Indiana. So here we are. A primary factor was the desire to be closer to one of our daughters in our senior years. However, there was also a sense that it might be a good thing to make a fresh start at a new place rather than sticking to what was familiar and mostly comfortable. So maybe I'm not quite so much of a stick in the mud after all. Joining Assembly Mennonite Church has been an important part of all this. And relating back to where we started Marcus Borg's third mega story, for me, joining us the Assembly community has very much felt like arriving at home again. I guess I didn't realize how dissatisfied and how much of a misfit in church life I felt prior to making the connection with Assembly. In important ways, it feels like I found my home again, just like Marcus Borg says. Some of the things that have contributed to Assembly becoming a special home for me would include the following: intellectual honesty and curiosity, strong lay leadership by people who take the gospel seriously in their lives, support for and commitment to diversity, appreciation of the arts and beauty, social justice emphasis in tangible ways, inclusion of meaningful ritual and worship, an openness to mystery, strong, warm community of open, caring, compassionate people, discipleship as a priority, commitment to doing church together with everybody having a role. So thanks to all of you who have in so many ways helped to make our arrival at Assembly a homecoming for Marna and me. It's not perfect here, but it's pretty darn good.